Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. You're listening to the We Podcast, where we speak, we grow, we rise. I'm your host, Sarah Manares. The We Podcast is part of the We Community, where we are passionate about creating community and providing a space for speaking authentic truth, growing together, and rising above challenges and into the full power of all we were created to be. This week on the We Podcast, the tables have turned a bit. My great friend and founding leader of the We Community, Heather Williams, is interviewing me. Heather was a previous guest on the podcast, and I'm typically the one prompting others to share their story. This time around, it's me sharing mine. I can't ask my guests to do something that I'm not willing to do, right? So I'm not going to lie, this one is a vulnerable one for me, and I'm not sure that I've ever shared this much in one space. But I'm glad that I'm able to do it here, and I hope that it is helpful and it inspires you. So we talk about my experience from young childhood until today, what I've struggled with, what I've learned, and how I've gotten to where I am. For those of you who don't know me or are listening for the first time, I'm a counselor, mentor, trainer, writer, and speaker. I'm the founder of the We Community, the We Podcast, and We Are Women Rising. And I'm looking forward to digging deep and sharing my heart and story with you all. So here we go. Here is Heather's interview with me. To this awesome episode of the We Podcast. I'm so excited to be here today with my dear, amazing, beautiful friend, Heather Williams. And today we are going to switch things up a bit. So Heather has been saying to me for a while, I think since I interviewed you in one of the very first episodes of the podcast.
Yeah.
What was that? Like episode 2, maybe?
I think it was 3 or 4.
Okay. She has been saying that she wants to interview me. And I'm like, yeah, that's good. Mm-hmm. You move it on. So here we are. And now today, Heather is going to be the interviewer and I'm going to be the interviewee. So this is a change of roles for me, and it's really good in a lot of ways, and I'm excited to let her kind of take the reins.
Good morning. I'm excited. So it was super fun to be sitting in that chair, but the whole time I was sitting there, I was like, oh, Sarah's story is incredible, and your passion in life's work is to empower women and teach people about vulnerability and the importance of sharing our stories. You've spent many, pretty much this past year interviewing women. You've created the monthly NoCo meetup and you've facilitated retreats, all in an attempt to create a space to give women the opportunity to step into their story and live their best life. And now it's our turn to hear about your story. So I just kind of want to open it up to you, and it's time for you to share some of your heart with us. So where do you want to start in your story?
Yeah. So it's funny because I feel like on the exterior, like I share my story all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is I share bits and pieces of it, you know, a little bit here, a little bit there. And it's a lot easier to be the one interviewing and letting other people, helping them share their story, than it is to be the one being interviewed. So I know we were having a little discussion before we hit record that I would love for the people listening to hear about just leading into this, because I think it's important for people to see me being vulnerable, and it can be really easy to not be when you're highlighting everybody else, and it can be a safe place where I can hide, and I want to make sure that I'm not doing that, I guess.
That's a really good point. You're human too.
Yeah. Yes. So what were you saying earlier about Brené Brown?
Oh, we were talking about the difference between empathy and sympathy. And she, I can't paraphrase it very well, but basically she's talking about how to be mindful of knowing that if you are really good at being empathetic, but you yourself aren't giving people the opportunity to support you and you're not being vulnerable back, then it is not genuine. And so I think that that's a good check and balance that I try to practice myself, because it's way easier for me to be empathetic with other people. And then I'm practicing letting those that I trust and that I know love me unconditionally in when I need the support. So practicing that vulnerability is an important part of being an empathetic person, because it can't be just one-sided.
Right. That's huge. But I think so many of us do that, though. I know I do. That this is something, well, I am working on my book, and that's like super vulnerable and really raw. But I find myself going to, oh, the people will read that in my book. Oh, I don't need to talk about it because it'll be in my book. And I like delay.
Huh? Yeah, something you can keep putting off, and it's right now it's hidden inside the pages of the book and hasn't been told in a complete sense yet.
Right, exactly. And we can't tell the whole story. As you know, you're the best person to interview me because you probably know me better than anybody else in the whole wide world. It's a little bit too much of a story for a 60-minute podcast.
It is. But I think you can give us a really good overview into your heart and go deep through phases of your life for sure in this episode of the podcast.
Yes, true.
Are you ready?
I'm ready, yes.
Okay. Who are you, Sarah? Tell us some of your story.
All right. So I grew up in Loveland, Colorado. My dad was a Baptist preacher from the time I was born. And so my dad had me later in life. I was with his second marriage. And so he had children, five children before me, and had been preaching for a long time. And then I came along way later. I think he was early 40s when he had me, and was born essentially into the church. We were there every time the doors were open. It was like it was my second home that I grew up in. And a lot of relationships were built there. A lot of my friends were there. I mean, everything was there. So I'm still friends with a few people today that I was friends with way, way, way back then. So that was a huge part of my identity. And things were rocky. My parents fought a lot. There was a lot of conflict, constant conflict in my house growing up.
What, can I ask you a question, Sarah?
Yeah.
What did the fighting look like? Was it violence or silence?
No, it was violent. It was yelling, screaming. I distinctly remember a night where my brother was 8 years older than me, I believe, or yeah, 8 years older than me. And he was a teenager, like when I was in my, I don't know, 8, 9 time is when it was really bad, probably. And he was doing his own thing, you know. Like, he had his own set of issues and stuff he was dealing with. But I remember him like coming into my bedroom and just hugging me, because and that was completely out of character for him in everyday life, but just because it was so bad. Mm-hmm. But then the thing was, we would go to church and we were the perfect family. Everything was perfect and wonderful. And that kind of stuff didn't happen behind the scenes, right? And so I was the perfect child. I was the preacher's daughter. And yeah, everything was good.
So I think a lot of families have a similar dynamic where you have the face in the front that you present to the world, and behind closed doors, that's not true. It's not real. So I think at a very young age, you and so many others of us learn that there's two separate sides of our lives, and they're not in alignment with each other.
Right. Oh, yeah. Definitely. At a very young age, I learned to put on the mask, to fake it and to act like everything was great. So I learned, and then around, so early childhood, I think I was probably 4, 5, 6-ish. And I'm not like really good with the timeline because I have a terrible memory. And I think part of me has like blocked some of the stuff out, but, at the same time, I was sexually abused by my babysitter's teenage son. And so that was going on. And you know how much shame comes with that, even at that young of an age. So that on top of the dynamics of my household, I very much learned to just withdraw into myself and not communicate, not say anything, just put on a happy face and act like everything was wonderful.
Did you tell anyone?
Did I tell anyone about the sexual abuse?
Yes.
Not until I was older. Not until I was like 12.
Why do you think that you kept it to yourself?
Because I thought it was my fault. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Did the perpetrator tell you it was your fault, or was that just a thought or belief that you had in your own heart?
So it took me a long time to realize this correlation. And no, I don't think he ever told me it was my fault or anything like that. But what was happening is I was going to church and hearing my dad from the pulpit say, if you have sex before marriage, if you do anything sexual outside of marriage, then you're dirty, or you're sinning, and you're gonna go to hell, and it's against God. And my dad was very fire and brimstone, as a lot of Baptist preachers are. But so I'm a little girl sitting in the pews hearing this message that anything sexual outside of marriage makes me bad and makes me unworthy of going to heaven, then I sure the hell I'm not going to tell anybody what's going on.
Wow. So. That's powerful, Sarah.
Yeah. Mm. So lots of shame, lots and lots. So when I was, well, I'm skipping ahead. So then my parents divorced in an ugly divorce when I was 10. My mom had an affair with someone in the church, and it was devastating. I mean, people in the church were so angry and so hateful, and I was a product of association, even though I was only 10 years old. I was my mother's daughter. And so,
Was your mom cast out of the church?
Oh yeah. So it was chaos. It was people screaming. I feel like I can't even totally put into words how bad it was. So my family, my friends, everything that I knew, everything that I thought I knew was supportive and loving, was instantly like ripped out from underneath me, and went from that church family being my family to saying mean, horrible, hateful things and not talking to us. And because I went with my mom, right, because that's the way you did it. And I didn't have a voice. I had no voice then. I just went with the flow, whatever was expected of me. I was pretty angry. Like, I remember a few angry outbursts because she went on to date the guy afterwards who ended up being a drug addict. So it was unstable, to say the least. So I think around 11, I went to the doctor for stomach pains, and the doctor said that I had an ulcer.
And as an 11-year-old child, your body was manifesting all of that stress and shame and chaos.
Yeah, and the doctor asked my mom, what's going on at home that this 11-year-old child has an ulcer? And I was sitting right there, and she grabbed me by the arm, and she pulled me off that bed, and she was like, how could you? How could you blame this on me? And pulled me out of the office, and for years later would recall that and say, do you remember when that doctor blamed your ulcer on me?
Wow. So she just, the space she was in, she just could not take responsibility for her actions. She put it on you.
Oh, yeah. Mm. So this is something I really struggled with my story. And this is something that as I'm talking right now, I struggle with still. I feel like I've come to more resolution with it than before. But how do I say the things that happened to me and still love my parents? Mm. You know what I mean? How do you find that without like feeling like you're bashing them or feeling like you're talking bad about them? Which is why I didn't tell any of my story for a really long time, because I didn't realize that they can coexist. Like, I can have experienced these things and they could have been really hurtful and hard, and I can still understand that, you know, my mom did the best she could with what she had at that time, and those were her coping skills, and that's what she knew. And I know she had a terrible childhood, and that's her story to tell, but that I can have empathy for her and I can love her because she's my mom. And for the good times we did have, there was lots of good, you know, sprinkled in there.
Yeah, I think that that's a really good point, Sarah. I think that a lot of the listeners are probably feeling connection with that piece of this, that a lot of our stories involve a lot of other people that we love so much. And by telling our story, it can be hurtful to other people, and that's not the intention. And that we all have wounds, and our parents have wounds, and we inadvertently share those wounds sometimes with our children because they're not healed. But that's why you're telling your story. You are healing those wounds, and it doesn't have to be a generational thing that continues. Mm-hmm. And that your parents didn't have the opportunity to heal their wounds, and you're changing your piece of the story with that. And I think everybody listening will be nodding their head saying, yeah, I haven't shared my story because that's the reason why, because I don't want to talk bad about anyone that I love and you know, maybe even have resolution with, and you don't want to bring up those old wounds and stir up the pot in the past, but you also should not carry that moving forward and keep it inside.
Mm-hmm. Amen, sister.
It's hard. It's so scary and hard. And yeah, I don't think there's a listener on here that doesn't have an element of that in their story too.
Yeah. To some extent. Mm-hmm. For sure.
So did you go back to the church after that with your dad?
Well, real quick. Yeah. The other piece is I've learned that I can tell the story. I don't have to be angry anymore. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like before, I would only tell it from an angry place. Mm. And that gave me like the fuel of, well, they did this to me, so I can talk about it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so not needing to be at a place of anger to talk about my experiences.
Well, you've done the work. You've done a lot of work to be able to share your story from a healthy place. And you're not coming from the place of the victim of those circumstances, but it is a piece of your story and it is worth sharing, but you're not sharing to get validation. You're right. Sharing because there's power in sharing so that everyone else knows, me too. I'm not alone.
Right. Huge, huge difference. Mm-hmm. Thank you. So my dad stayed pastoring the church and a lot of people left. It totally changed. But I went to his house every other weekend. And so when I was with him, I did go back to the church, but my involvement was completely different. The church was completely different. Everything was different after that. My mom would go back to different churches. That point was just, I don't know. We were all over the place, really. So then the aftermath of that whole situation took a while to resolve and calm down. I don't know if it ever really did, actually. There's a lot of people who still don't, well, there's been a feud in my family since before I was born, because my mom and dad really, from a lot of people's perspective, should have never been together.
Do you want to talk about that?
Well, I'll talk about it in the way that it affects me, because I don't want to tell other people's stories. And the reality is I don't think I have all of the information about that.
I think that's another huge theme in your story, right? Is there's bits and pieces that you still don't know, and you only have your perspective, or you've completed this story based off of your own experience. And I think that that's another common theme for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so often we make judgments or we come to a conclusion without all of the information. So I can't say what their thing was necessarily about. I know my dad was married before he met my mom, and there were people angry that he left his wife, and I don't know the time in between and all of that, but there was just a lot of people angry. My mom's family didn't like my dad. So when I was born, I was the child that shouldn't have been. Mm. So that was my theme since birth, was a lot of people hated me for being born.
And you knew that as a child?
It didn't take me long to figure it out. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because we would go back to Michigan. We went to Michigan every summer, which is where my mom is from. And there would be flat out brawls, like yelling, screaming matches with my dad and her family. And I was a product of that. Mm. Like, so, you know, I'm a product of this thing. And people wouldn't talk to me when I was little. I was like the bastard child, really. Like there was just a lot of hatred towards me. So, and at first I didn't know why. I didn't understand why, because then I had so much less information than I have now. But I just knew that I was not okay, I guess, is the best way I can put it. So I didn't feel that necessarily from my parents. Like, they had their own stuff, but I knew that they loved me. I knew that they loved me, but they had so much going on in their own lives that they they didn't have the ability to give me what I needed or to be present with me in the way that I needed. And so to have a conversation about any of this stuff would never in a million years happen, ever. And then my dad's kids from his first marriage, now I'm very close with one of them in particular. I had some resolution with my other sister before she passed last year. And they all were angry with me because my dad went on and he created a new life without them. And I was also a product of that. So it's an interesting thing to this, and this is a theme I really grew up with, is always feeling like I never did anything for people to not like me, and I never understood why they didn't like me. So then the people-pleasing man was strong, and it was my job to earn people's affection because that's what I had to do. I had to earn it. So.
Yeah, well, I just want to hug you. How were you at making friends, like on the playground when you were a kid and then in middle school? I didn't meet you until high school. And I can share my perspective of who you were to me back then, but I'm curious how all of this theme impacted your ability to make friends with kids your own age.
That's interesting because I was great at it.
Okay.
I loved kids my own age. My friends were my stability. And that they always have been. To this day, I think my strong friend relationships give me so much strength. And they did back then too. So I had a really, really good group of friends who I'm still friends with to this day. I was really quiet, very, very, very shy and quiet. And so making new friends was hard, but I already kind of had an established group of friends that I had in elementary school. So I didn't really ever, I know if you would have put me in a brand new school at that age, I have no idea how it would have turned out. But I had great friends.
They became your safe space.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Was there any other activity or hobby that you dove into during that time in your life that gave you a sense of self outside of the chaos that you were living in?
Oh yeah. I smile because it makes my heart smile. My horses. So I had horses. I started riding, I think, by myself when I was like 3. And that was my escape. We lived out in the country before my parents got divorced. And at 6 years old, my dad would be like, tell my brother, go saddle the horse for your sister. And Greg would go out and saddle the horse for me. And I would get on and I would leave for hours and ride around and crazy.
Can you imagine letting Logan do that by himself for hours?
No. So horses became my horse. Became my person. Like, I loved my horses. I've had a few along the way, but that was definitely my safe space. So I could get on the horse and I could leave. Like, it was my escape. I didn't have to be there, and I could go and I could explore and have adventures and be by myself and be in nature and not be in the chaos of everything that was going on at my house. So
I'm so grateful that you had the horse as a healthy way to escape for a while.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I keep telling Nick, I need a horse. I haven't owned a horse since Logan was born. We sold my last horse after he was born. And it's like, literally a piece of my heart is missing. Like, and people don't get it, I think, but like such a huge coping skill. Mm-hmm. I don't know why it's making me cry.
It makes sense though. I mean, that was your solace and you were able to just be. And I mean, there's science behind how therapeutic animals are as well as nature. And there's doctors in other countries prescribing nature mm-hmm. and horse therapy to people as a way to deal with depression and anxiety and disease and all of these things. So it makes perfect sense. You need to get a horse, Sarah.
I do. Well, I would love to do equine therapy. I would love that because I do understand the healing power for sure of that relationship. It's huge. So I did go on to show horses, gosh, most of my life until I think I finally quit when my mom left. So Aubrey was showing a little bit, and then I would like enter in a class here and there for the old people. And I loved it, but after my mom left, it was, we just had too much going on and it was too expensive. And I had a newborn and I had a new business and it was just hard. So, but
yeah. It might be time to get something back into your life, make space for that again.
Yeah, I don't want to show again. I don't want to be in that scene, but I do want to be able to saddle up and go away for a few hours and have that peace and quiet. And
all right, friends, if you're listening and you have a horse, you better get a hold of Sarah and let her come ride.
Oh, sounds good to me. So, all right, I know we have to fairly hurry. I don't want to keep people on here all day, but so I moved around with my mom, elementary school, junior high, and then had a lot of problems with bullies actually in middle school. Like all the girls wanted to kick my butt, which I think is normal. Probably, I don't know. And then I went to high school, and this is where you come in. So it's interesting because I look back and I think about, like, I picture myself for some reason as this like meek, timid, quiet person. But at the same time, I was really strong and opinionated and maybe kind of bitchy in some areas. So it's interesting to like, I don't know, see how those two things coexist with each other.
Yeah, well, and I think actually I heard Tony Robbins kind of talk about this a little bit at one of his events about how if we're going to blame a person for the things they didn't give us, we also need to thank them because that's where our strengths come in and the resilience and the independence and all of those things that we're lacking create some positive personalities or behaviors as well. And so, when I met you, I knew you were shy, but I also saw you as incredibly confident and proud. Like the way that you walked through the halls, you were broadcasting very clearly who you were. I could tell that you were a cowgirl and that you loved identifying as that. Like you didn't try to hide that, even though it wasn't like the mainstream thing to do. And you always had your hair done and your makeup done and your outfit matched. And I was just drawn to you because we were so polar opposites. I had never ridden on a horse before and had never starched my shirt or my pants. And you seemed so carefree and you laughed all the time. And I just wanted more of that. And so it's no wonder I was drawn to you.
Well, I was drawn to you too. And you liked me even though I wore teal jeans. Like I said, I feel like it's interesting because I didn't feel confident on the inside.
I don't know if any of us really do. You know, that's the thing. It's kind of the motto that comes into my mind is like, fake it till you make it. We're all just doing the best we can and we all feel insecure, but we don't want anybody to know that, because if people pick up on that, then you get bullied. And so even, I mean, I feel like I kind of floated around and had friends in every, you know, group, and wasn't afraid to talk to people that I didn't really know. But on the inside, you know, I was incredibly insecure and just wanted people to like me. And I think I was funny and kind and all of those things. So even though outwardly we may have presented ourselves differently, I think we, all of us, probably had the same insecurities inside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I had gotten so good at pretending to be happy. You know what I mean?
Amen. Yeah. Amen.
Mm-hmm. So yes, we met in high school, and I feel like, so that was sophomore year, and you, and I said this in our podcast where I interviewed you, I feel like you were like the beginning of me learning or even knowing that I was allowed to have a voice, because you were the first person who challenged me to step outside of my comfort zone, to do things that scared the hell out of me. And you're still that way to this day. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
But I remember being like, oh my gosh, like, I can just be who I am with this person. And I've never experienced that before in my life. Like, to be able to just be is so powerful, to not have to wear the mask, to not have to pretend, to be able to let it all go and let somebody know who you really are and that you really are struggling. And I mean, it's huge. It's huge. So that meeting you was a pivotal, it was pivotal for me. And so I had been in, until I met you, I had been in scenarios or relationships or situations where the fake me was rewarded highly. So, you know what I mean? So why let anybody know who I really was? So when I started hanging out with you, everyone around me was pissed too. As you know.
Oh, I remember. Who says other girl? She's such a bad influence on you. You're changing.
It's true. I did change significantly. I probably went from one extreme to another, because I think in some ways we were both struggling.
Absolutely.
And so we kind of went into this place of struggling together. And I think a lot of the things I was doing was pretty self-destructive, like relationships with boys. And yeah. So, but at the same time, gosh, like that was a side effect. I was being destructive before. It was just a lot.
You were hiding it. You were hiding it.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was a lot more on the DL before. Yeah. This, it kind of broke open. So I remember like you making me howl at the moon while we were driving in your convertible and the crazy things we did. And I love it. Like looking back, like what it, you know, we have, I think, these like breaking open moments in our lives, and that those moments for sure were breaking open for me. So.
It's so beautiful to hear you talk about those breaking open moments, because I don't know that I knew that or recognized that back then. I don't know if you did, but maybe it's a hindsight thing, but I think we all have those, and it kind of just makes me think of like serendipitous events, you know, we don't know until we know, and it may be years later, and those seeds are being planted, or we are being broken open, and something new is being created.
Yeah. Oh, totally. I think I knew back then, in a way, like I knew something was changing. I knew something was different within me, and it was scary and it was exhilarating at the same time. But also I look back at myself back then and I realize, and this is part of why I want to help people so much in these areas, like I realize how much chaos and anxiety I was constantly living in as a result of trauma. Like my early childhood trauma kept me from ever being able to like take a deep breath. Like, what is that even? I don't even know, you know, constant performance, constant anxiety, constant from this to the next, no settling down, no introspection, no, oh gosh, like looking at yourself and growing was like the scariest thing.
Well, you really didn't have a space outside of yourself that was safe to do that though, Sarah. You know, it's, if you did slow down and you did sit in it, who was there to support you through that process?
Right.
So you just kept moving. You just kept doing whatever you could to busy yourself. We joke about it, but you would call me at 6 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday. Hey, get up. What are we doing today? And for me, I was like, what in the heck is wrong with you? Why aren't you sleeping in? But you just had to keep going. You had to get out of the house. You had to keep moving. Mm-hmm. You wanted to do fun stuff all the time so that you wouldn't have to sit and be still in all of that chaos.
Oh, yeah. Yep. He used to get so pissed at me. Like, what the heck? Why are you calling? No, I don't want to go to the lake at 7 a.m.
Call me back at 10.
I'm like, what's wrong with her? Doesn't she want to get up and leave?
And see, I was the opposite. I would retreat and just want to sleep or stay in my room and read. So for me, and I still can get that way when I have too much stress, too many things on my plate. I am very social and extrovert, but I retreat and just want to be home in my jammies with no stimulation at all and just be alone and have quiet. But I can get out of balance really easily with that too. So I have to be very conscious of that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting that that can exist at either extreme.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, too isolated or wanting to be with people all the time. But I think this is why I love personal growth and talking about things like trauma and that type of stuff, because if I would have had that information earlier in my life, like obviously I wasn't meant to for some reason, but how different things would be. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
To know like functioning that way is normal and this is why and there's a reason. Not until I had this information, so not until I went to the counseling school and got all of this information, not until that point could I have grace for myself.
Mm.
I had zero ability to have any grace for myself until I knew the reasoning behind why I was doing the things that I was doing.
You just thought you were bad.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I lived in shame and guilt and fear most of my life.
Yeah. Do you feel like those emotions perpetuate the behavior even more?
Oh, yeah.
Because you're bad and because you're full of shame, you continue down a path of bad choices.
Oh, yeah, because you have to prove. Mm. You have to prove you're not bad. You have to prove you're worthy. You have to prove that people love you.
So you were living outside of your story and hustling for your worthiness.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And then every time somebody didn't see my worth,
it validated it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a terrible, terrible cycle. And you knew me then. You knew the chaos and yeah. See, this is what I'm saying. It's too much of a story for one podcast.
Well, we're going on 40 minutes, so okay. I feel like we're okay. So really quick, I'm going to ask you, when you were growing up, what did you think your life would look like when you were an adult? What did you want? Who did you want to be? What did you want to do?
When I was growing up, I thought I would get married young, but to like a perfect man who was all of the things, right? Like God fearing, like all of these things, mm-hmm. Who would be like the spiritual head of my household, and we would have kids and everything would line up perfectly. Mm-hmm. And I would go to the world show for the quarter horse showing, and like that's what I thought. I thought it would all be simple. Mm. And so I know now, but back then I didn't realize my worth and my value, and this is a journey I'm going through right now too, in a little bit of a like an up level way, if that makes sense. But my worth and my value was 100% in men. Like my husband held my value. Mm. And whether or not I had value was dependent on if I had a husband who valued me. Like men held everything for me.
Because that's what you were taught.
That's what I was taught in the church. And don't get me wrong, I want to like be clear. I believe in God. I love Jesus. I don't like religion. that's a whole nother conversation. But I think there are things that were taught to me in the church that were not okay, right. To be blunt.
That were harmful even.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think it's good to admit that, because I think that that's another theme that a lot of other people are probably trying to navigate is, you know, how do I continue to pursue my faith or my spirituality when not everything is good? And there's things that don't feel safe or feel right. And I think you're on this journey right now with that. And on the outside, and what you've shared with me, it's beautiful. And you have a really delicate way of navigating that and not making it be good or bad. But you're able to kind of pick out the things that, you know, that don't sit well with you while still exploring this journey and not getting closed off to it. So that's really admirable.
Mm. Thank you. Thanks. Yeah, it's hard to challenge the things that have been ingrained in you to think, well, if I challenge this, I'm going to hell. If I challenge this, I'm a bad person. You know, to be able to say, I can take a look at this and I can see what fits for me and what doesn't fit for me, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. And I can have a better relationship with myself and with God. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's gone through transformations over the years, but there was something else I wanted to say. Yeah.
So anyway. When you were a little kid, your value came from.
Oh yeah. That's what we're
and talking. You wanted a husband and a white picket fence, and you were going to be a homemaker. And then did that change for you? In high school, did you start to have a sense of self outside of that story, or were you still envisioning that story?
Oh, I envisioned that story definitely all through high school. And I went to college, honestly, because it was like, I wanted to go to college, but it was more, this is my opportunity to get out, get away, to put some distance, to be my own self, to explore who I am, but also to find a husband.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I'll go to college, I'll find a man who's in college and who is, you know, can provide for me and who will be my husband, and then I'll stay home. Like, that was the plan. And as you know, it didn't turn out that way, but thank goodness. But so I went to college and I was wild and crazy and I drank way too much. And yeah, I.
Well, you went from having so much structure and control outside of you that it was like the doors bursted open and here you are out on your own with no rules, nobody judging you, nobody, you know, checking in on you. And so you just, all of the things you didn't experience when you were younger, you took full advantage of having the opportunity to experience it, even if it was a little too much at times. But you were out on your own for the first time ever, really. Mm-hmm. Figuring out what that was and who you were.
Right.
Yeah. Which I think is a lot of college kids have that.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing that's interesting I was just thinking about is, and this just occurred to me, actually, I did have a man who wanted to marry me and would have married me. And all of the things that I thought I wanted then probably would have happened, maybe to some extent.
Do you think you were sabotaging that?
Well, I chose not to do that, even though that's what I said I wanted. I think I've always had an adventurous side to myself, and I think maybe that's what I was supposed to believe or what I thought I was supposed to want. But when it came down to it, that really wasn't what I wanted.
I think it was what you wanted, but it was what your parents wanted. Because I remember when you started to break away from that relationship, they kind of panicked and started questioning everything you were doing and everyone you were spending time with. And because that was the story they had created for you too.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. So it's huge. And I think a lot of people go into adulthood still having somebody else's story for them. I think we often take that story and we make it our own because we think that that's the right thing to do. But in reality, when we dig into it, it's not what we really want. It's not who we really are. And so college for me was a time of totally separating from that and going from one extreme to another. But I still feel like I still had to prove my worth, and that was through men, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's the first part of my story. I don't know where to go now because there's still so much.
So when you were in college, you were still hustling for your worthiness and you were all about the boys. And what happened?
So I got into a relationship with Aubrey's dad, who was the epitome of everything I wasn't.
Oh my gosh. If that is so true. He was the loudest, goofiest, craziest guy literally on campus.
It's true.
Everyone at college knew who he was.
Yeah.
Everyone.
So yes, he was nothing like me. And that was appealing to me. So appealing to me. That everybody knew who he was, because then that proved my worth, right? Like, if I could get him, then I was great because he was desirable. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So we had a relationship. It was destructive, on and off, lots of fighting, lots of cheating on his side, not good. And then, so I got pregnant with Aubrey my junior year of undergrad, and after that was the first time I made a decision to live a better life.
That resonates with me so much. As you know, our stories are very similar in that regard, both in unhealthy relationships with men, and then we became pregnant. And then even if we couldn't love ourselves enough in that moment, we became mothers, and that changes you. Mm-hmm. And you make a different choice because now you have a child that is going to be impacted by your decisions.
Yeah, totally.
Mm-hmm. So you chose when you became Aubrey's mother that that was no longer part of your story anymore. You didn't need that to hustle for that worthiness with men.
I wish. I wish it was that.
Okay.
It's baby steps.
Okay.
At that point, I think I had said, like, it, because when I, before I got pregnant with her, I was drinking a lot. I was partying a lot. I was doing a lot of things. And I remember back then, it's hard for me to say this now because I'm so far removed from it. And I think we kind of forget, like, the further away we get. But I remember back then, very close to when she was born, I remember saying that she saved me because I would be dead in the gutter somewhere if I wouldn't have gotten pregnant with her, because I was being so self-destructive. And people ask me, you know, because there's a lot of, there's suicide is something that's talked a lot more about now, a lot more openly, thank goodness, and we're pushing for that. And this is another big reason why, but people have asked me if I was ever suicidal, and I think I would say no, that I wasn't actively suicidal. But I would say that I didn't give two shits about my life. And in a sense, I didn't care if I lived or died. And so I don't think that's active suicide like we think about it.
Right.
Like, I wasn't intending to die by suicide or planning it or anything like that. But I wouldn't have, I would have been okay if I didn't live.
Sure.
And so I think that's part of the destructiveness too, and like pushing the boundaries to the very, very edge. It, yeah, this might not turn out okay, and I don't really care if it doesn't. Mm-hmm. And so when I had Aubrey, it was like, okay, like it gave me a sense of I have to live. I have to be present in this life. Like, I can't be so destructive anymore. I didn't have value for myself at that point. I had value for her. And I had no clue what that meant. So I was going into a relationship with her the same way my relationship was with my mom. Like, so intertwined in, we are one person, you know what I mean? My life is dependent on you and what you do and the decisions you make. And so at that point, it wasn't near as healthy as saying, I need to figure out who I am. And I had no concept of that still, but I just knew that I needed to provide her with a good life. And whether or not she had a good life was a reflection of me. So, but still, I was going out on the weekend, like one night a weekend, she would go to my mom's and I would completely party it up. So I was then only being destructive one night a week rather than 7 nights a week. So there we go.
But you stayed in school, which I think is huge.
Oh yeah, I love school.
You were a single mom and you were living on campus and you were partying one night a week being destructive, but you stayed in school and you maintained friendships. And so you call it baby steps, but there was a pretty huge shift for you when you became Aubrey's mom.
Yeah. I mean, I cared about school then. Like, I didn't really care about it before. Like, that I cared about what I was learning, and I was more open to what I was learning than I was before. I've always loved school. I say I could be a professional student if that was possible.
I thought you would have stayed in school forever.
I wanted to. I loved school. So I graduated. That was crazy. And I think I say this a lot, but so I finished my junior year, summer school. I did summer school while I was pregnant. August 1st, she was born August 15th, and I went back for my senior year, like August 25th or 26th. So I went back with a 10-day-old and with a donut, carrying my donut to class.
To sit on, not to eat. Let's clarify.
So let's say that I went from being a pretty appealing woman on campus to not so much. So anyways, I finished. I had a lot of help from my friends and my sister and my mom. And everybody's always says, like, how did you do that? And I couldn't have done it without the support that I had. I had friends who, my friend Kelly quit her job at the tanning salon so she could watch Aubrey. I really felt like a rally of the troops at that point, and that's really a huge reason why I made it through.
It takes a village, right?
Oh my gosh, yes. Firm believer in that. So I'd like to take credit for it, but I feel like I can't without giving so much credit to the people who helped me. And then I graduated and worked for a year and hated it, and then decided I want to go back to school because I couldn't find a job. My bachelor's is in behavioral science with a minor in psychology, and you can't do anything with that degree, unfortunately.
Take note of that, college kids.
Yeah. I couldn't find a job anywhere with a bachelor's degree that paid more than, I don't know, like $10 an hour. And I'm a single mom. There's no way that was even possible. So I decided I wanted to help people, and I wanted to work with kids. And so I went back to be a school counselor. And I love the idea of having summers off with Aubrey, and got almost all the way through the program. This is another pivotal moment for me was grad school.
Okay.
The knowledge that I learned there, that I gained, has completely molded me. And like I said, allowed me to have grace for myself. I had never heard of grace or vulnerability or any of these things. Like, I didn't even know that they existed.
Not only did you not know about them, but the messages you had gotten throughout your childhood were the opposite of that.
Yes.
Yeah. So you didn't have language for it, but you also were not only taught it, you were taught the opposite.
100%. Yeah. So this point is when I could really start to challenge my core beliefs, like the core beliefs that had been instilled in me by my parents, and start looking at what do I believe? And for the first time in my life, who am I? What do I want? And I'm allowed to figure out what I want. Like, holy moly, that's amazing. And this is why, too, I'm a huge advocate for counseling, because I don't think you have to go to counseling school to learn all of this. I think you go to counseling and you learn a lot of it because this is what we're taught, right? Mm-hmm. And so this is what therapists teach you, and they sit with you in that space. And gosh, it's just so powerful. So
really quick, Sarah, I would love to ask you, what were some of the beliefs that you started to challenge, and what did you replace them with? Can you think of a couple of examples?
Yeah, a huge one was, so I just created shame after shame after shame for myself. And so when I would go out drinking on the weekend and make terrible decisions and do things, then I would wake up the next day and I would feel complete and total shame, right? Like, yes, I am a terrible person. Yes, I do make horrible decisions. Yeah, I am going to hell. Yeah, I'm not worthy of love or whatever. All of these messages that I just continued to reinforce. I continue to reinforce them over and over with my actions. And once I learned about why I was doing what I was doing, once I learned about the fact that it wasn't my fault, I had never been told that. Ever.
Have you been told that now? Have somebody said those words to you, that it wasn't your fault?
Yeah. Now.
Mm-hmm. But not until you were an adult.
Yes. Wow. Yeah. So not until I went to therapy. I had told a few friends prior to therapy who were supportive and loving, but that's a huge thing, especially at a younger age, to tell somebody, you know, to put on somebody, and we don't have the words to say. That's why I am such an advocate for putting teenagers and kids in therapy, because they go to their friends and their friends don't have the words. They don't have the healing that they need at that point to help them. And so that wasn't my friend's fault. It wasn't anybody's fault. But I did, when my mom found out, she took me to one therapy appointment. And I refused to talk.
How old were you?
I think I was like 12 or 13. She found out because I told my sister and my sister told her.
Okay.
And it was never talked about with her. I never had a conversation with her about it. She just took me essentially to the therapy office and dropped me off. And I sat there and stared at the therapist the entire time and like refused to engage. And so I wasn't pushed. Like, they didn't push me. It was just like, okay, she refuses. So we're just never going to take her back. And we're just never going to talk about it again. Mm. So it was just never talked about again. Mm-hmm.
So it sounds to me like one of the beliefs that you used to have was that you were bad and shame was kind of your emotional home, and you started to replace that once you had the tools that you were learning in college. Wow. and just by becoming a mother, you replaced that with, okay, this, my behaviors are separate from me and I'm not bad. And I can start to choose differently for myself. Do you agree that that might be one of the themes?
Oh yeah, I got totally off track. Sorry. but yeah, I think
I think it's helpful for people to know, like, okay, this used to be theme for me, and now I've replaced it with this. Yeah. Sometimes it's hard. Like, we get to a place where, like, okay, this is no longer serving me, but I don't know what to replace it with.
Yeah, so once I started learning and going to therapy and figuring out these things and getting what I needed, I realized that wasn't my fault. Like, of course I was making the decisions I was making. Mm-hmm. because I was living in trauma, because I was living with all of these things. So at that point, I could really start to challenge them and say, you know, I can have compassion. That's huge. Being able to have compassion for myself to replace that hatred towards myself, or that shame of who I was, to be able to step into a place of compassion for myself is, I mean, it's huge. It's the difference of everything, because then I can allow myself to heal, and I can allow myself the grace and love that I needed, rather than perpetuating and continuing in that destructive cycle. So to even know that I'm allowed to have compassion is huge. So those are the main things that I would say I've really tried replacing it with, is the grace and the compassion and the mercy, and even when I don't understand it, to speak to myself in a way that's loving and kind. It's just, it makes all the difference.
Do you feel like you're able to be more compassionate and understanding to other people as you've worked on healing your own wounds?
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. I've always had an immense amount of compassion and empathy for other people, just not for myself.
Yeah, there's a meme that says, like, do you love yourself the way you love other people, or some, there's like themes about that. Like, mm-hmm. would you give yourself the same grace that you're giving everyone else? And I think that's another good checkpoint. And mm-hmm. I think the more we practice that, the more genuine that grace and empathy is towards other people too, though.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Well, it's easier for me to have compassion for people or empathy because I know how hard it is to get there. Like, I think that's the piece that helps me in my helper role, is understanding that this isn't just, you know, an easy process.
No, it doesn't happen overnight.
Right. It doesn't happen overnight. And we need people who are going to love us through it and help us through it and support us through it. And there's going to be steps along the way, but it doesn't all happen at once. It doesn't all happen overnight. Yeah. It's a process for sure.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. So once you started your grad school years and you started to really question, like, wow, what do I want? Who am I? What am I doing? What started to shift for you? What things in your life outside of school started to open up to you? Did you start to meet new people? Did you start to experience life in different ways?
I did. At that point, I went on my first, like, personal spiritual journey. And I went to, like, this, like, a religious extreme. Like, I dove into religion.
Mm-hmm.
And
on your terms?
On my terms, yes.
Yeah.
On my terms. And I did a lot of work on trying figuring out who God is and changing my view of God, because prior to that, I had always viewed God as, you know, this mean entity in the clouds who was, like, ready to strike me with a lightning bolt whenever I stepped out of line or did something wrong. Like, God was a vengeful, hateful God who didn't like me very much. So I really dove into trying to figure out who God really was to me, and that's not at all who God is, not in my opinion. And so being able to separate that, so I did make a lot of great relationships with people in my church, and Aubrey was little, and so they were a support to me then, and I really changed my view of this shame-based God to an all-loving, all-accepting, mercy and grace-filled God. So that was pivotal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I took a break. I stopped dating for a while, for about 2 years, and then I met Nick after my personal growth and development break. And it was good. Yeah. So that's on the latest podcast, kind of a little bit about our story. But
yeah, I listened to his episode, and even though he's a man of few words, you did a really great job of getting him to share some of his heart, and your guys's journey is incredible too. You know, the highs and the lows and the valleys and the peaks of marriage, and together you have built a foundation and a family, and you have Logan now, who is such a little bright light in pure joy. And I think he's also a teacher in his own right too. And I think a lot, like a whole other phase, and I don't know if you want to talk about this, but a whole other phase of your next level of development or journey is going on with him, kind of as a teacher, facilitator of that. Like, I feel like Logan has even questioned or challenged some of your beliefs that you had already kind of felt certain about. And isn't it interesting how our children do that to us?
Oh gosh, yes, it's amazing. Both of my kids have been teachers for me, for sure. Mm-hmm. Just in very different ways. And Nick has been a teacher for me in a lot of ways too. And I think in marriage, challenging that my identity is in him, gosh, that's a hard thing to come to reality with together, you know? But I also learned in school too, what a healthy and unhealthy relationship look like. I had never known that before. And so I had it in the books, right? I had it in the book knowledge, but I didn't have it in the actual like life, like experience knowledge until I married him. And navigating that has been a huge, huge teacher to me. I think every single person that's in our life is there for a reason. And we learn something from them. And our kids, I mean, our husband or our partner, this, it's not an accident that we've ended up with them. And it's not an accident that we have the friends that we do. It wasn't an accident that I met you.
So I believe that too. Very, very, very much. Even the people that stay for only a season or two. Mm-hmm. And especially the people that challenge us or reveal things about ourselves that need to be healed. Mm-hmm. So I practice gratitude for the hard relationships too, because I know that they serve a purpose as well.
Yes. Well, totally. And I think that I would encourage the listeners right now to take a look at the relationships in their life and what is it that they need to learn maybe from those relationships. Because I know for me and a lot of people, I see a lot of people do this, we want to mold people to become what fits inside our safe box. And so therefore control is huge. And I used to be very controlling. I tried really hard to control every single thing that happened, and including Nick. And it still comes out sometimes, I'm not gonna lie.
Hey, we talked about this being a practice, right?
But the reality is this is the shift. If we can sit back and we can think about, why is this person in my life? What do I need to learn from them, rather than trying to change them into who I want them to be, mm-hmm. or who mm-hmm. I think they should be? Mm-hmm. There's, oh my gosh, like you can take a deep breath. Like, there's so much release in that. There's so much peace in that. And all of them have taught me something huge. So, yeah, Logan, since Logan's been born, definitely has opened up the second part of my spiritual journey for sure. So there's a lot more to the story, but I know this is an hour-ish and we're already over an hour podcast. So I'll kind of fast forward through the rest and people can read my book when it comes out, hopefully, the beginning of 2019. So to look forward, you know, I got married, I had Logan, things were going pretty well. I was growing, I was learning, I started my private practice. Things actually started my practice before I met Nick, but the practice was going well. It was growing, thriving. I had lots of therapists working for me, and I still felt like there's just something that's not right. Like, this isn't necessarily where I'm supposed to be. And so in 2012, I felt very strongly that I needed to tell my story, that I needed to write a book. And so I started then, and we're now in 2018, and it still hasn't been published, but there's been a lot of work that I've done to get me there. And so there was a progression of things that happened that like rocked my world. In a lot of different ways than I had ever experienced before. And so 2012, my mom disappeared right after Logan was born. So that was a huge period of stress and chaos and confusion. And my mom was one of my main supports. We had a pretty codependent relationship for sure. So to go from having her in every area of my life to having her in no area of my life was very traumatic.
It was a game changer for sure.
Oh, huge game changer. And the way that it happened, like the way that it happened with not knowing where she was or if she was safe or what. Yeah, that's a whole nother story. And then the next year, my dad got sick. And then the next year, my brother passed away. And then the next year, Aubrey had a cancer scare with her thyroid. And then my cousin died. And like, there was all of this stuff. We had support relationships that we had to walk away from. And within a couple of year period, I went from having support within my family to having none at all. And oh my gosh, like, that was hard. I just wrote an article about this in NoCo Mom's blog that's coming out soon, in that shift, and especially the holidays are coming, and it's hard. It's hard over and over again. It's not just when it happens, you know? So that's another big piece of my story. I think that all of that happening and all of that support being removed from my life and the codependency being removed, I think it made me look at myself in a deeper way. It made me depend on myself in a deeper way. It made me step up in a lot of ways. And also the deaths. This is the first time I really had ever experienced death in my life of anybody who I really loved. And so prior to this, I was invincible. Like, you know what I mean? And there was plenty of time. And this was like, you never know when things are going to change. You never know when your last day is here. You never know when you won't have somebody in your life, or when you won't have time left to write that book or to do that thing. And so something really shifted within me where I was like, okay, I am going to create the life that I know I need to be living within myself. And so I decided, and as you know, because you're one of the main people who I was like messaging and saying, Heather, I'm going to do this. And I'm so scared. It's so vulnerable and it's so scary. And I don't know if I should. And thank God for you. And thank God for the family that I do have now, who really are my friends, who said, you know, you said, yeah, hell yeah, you need to do it. And I'm here, and it's going to suck and it's going to be scary, but I'm here to help you and I'm here to support you. And I feel like, oh, we all need that in our lives. So, and a lot of people don't have it. And that's a huge reason for me establishing the community. And so I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but I went from living a life of safety to very quickly living a life of exposure and putting it out there. And it was really scary. But the second that I started having people say, oh my gosh, thank you for doing that. Thank you for writing that. Thank you for putting that out there. That touched me. That helped me. It was like more and more and more confirmation that I needed to continue to do it. And my world was open to a community of people who thought the same way that I did, which all of these years, I thought I was freaking nuts. You know what I mean? Like, I'm the only one who has these wild. Yeah. And that's being confirmed as I'm seeing clients in therapy and hearing their stories. And yeah. So I decided to expand outside of the therapy office. And I love doing therapy. And I also think it was very safe for me to sit one-on-one with a person. And I think it's necessary. And everybody needs to do it, but I don't think that's where I belong at this point. Like, I've kind of gone through the process and I feel like now my place is more, or I guess it's on a bigger scale. It's helping more people experience this community, more people experience the Heathers saying, hell yeah, you need to do that. Yes, that's important. What you have to say matters. I remember the first time I heard that. I remember where I was. I remember what I was doing. I remember who said it. And I remember reading that and bawling my eyes out, sitting down at the table and just sobbing. Because for the first time, I had been told that I was capable of the dreams that were in my heart.
And you believed it.
And I believed it. Yeah. And it was overwhelming because it's scary too. It's scary too to step into that. But to have somebody believe in you, to have a community of people that you can go to, it's the game changer. It was the game changer for me.
So that's the mission of the WE community.
The mission of the WE community is to provide that community for people. It's to provide a space where they can be authentic. They can be real. The WE podcast is a part of that also, because there's power in our story and we can't live in shame. Shame can't live in a place where we are speaking about it. It's just impossible. And too often people get into this place where they're so afraid to use their voice. And I know, because I've been there. It's exactly like you were talking about earlier with the books and staying home. Mm-hmm. It's isolating. We can get too isolated. We can get to a place where we are too disconnected, and that takes over, and then the voices in our head and all of the lies and all of the stories we're telling ourselves, that is what guides our life rather than the reality, right? And the reality is that people need us. People need us to show up. They need us to speak our truth. They need that for their own healing. And we need connection. We need each other. We need to support each other. We need to feel like we're a part of something, and we need to be surrounded by people who are in the same place, who can be vulnerable, who can lift us up, and who can journey with us in that way. And too often we just don't experience that. So that's my heart behind the We community, in a really long answer.
Well, it is an honor and a privilege to be linking arms with you and to be asked to be a founding leader of the community. And one of the things that I know we both believe is we're better together, and we are the sum of the people we spend the most time with. So what better way to benefit, both by giving but also by receiving, from like-minded and forward-facing people to impact our community at the community level, and then who knows where it's going to go from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Sarah, thank you for sharing your heart with us. I know that you want to wrap up. At the end of every podcast, you ask the interviewees two questions. So I would like to ask you the same two questions.
Okay. Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So the first one is, what has been the most vital to your growth?
You would think I'd be prepared for these. The most vital to my growth, I would say, I can't just say one. A lot of times people say one thing, and I can't say one. I think it's been a combination of a lot of things, but I would say knowledge, expanding my understanding of the world, expanding my understanding of people, of God, of everything is vital. Because I think if we don't seek knowledge, if we don't seek, because to me, knowledge is growth. We can't really grow without new knowledge. And so we have to seek that knowledge. Otherwise, we live in a world where our view of the world is like the size of a quarter, and we're looking through a little hole, you know, and that's all we can see, and that's all we know. And so a lot of times that place is not good for people. Mm-hmm. And until we can start to expand that view, things really can't change. And so I think acquiring knowledge is vital. And I also think that the relationships that we have in our lives are also vital. I don't think that I could be where I am now without either one of those things.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
So the next,
and I have to add, sorry, and vulnerability in those relationships.
So not just superficial or safe relationships.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It can't just be relationships where, you know, you hang out and go shopping.
But why not? Those are so easy.
I know. It's true. And those relationships serve a purpose, but they're the relationships where we can show up and we can be vulnerable and we can be ourselves. It's huge. It's huge.
Yeah.
So the vulnerability, listening to your own self has also been big. So, yes.
Okay, Sarah, what's something you want everyone to know?
Again, I can't just say one thing. I want people to know that they're loved. I want people to know that they already have most of the answers inside of them, but they just have to learn how to listen to that. I think too often we think that we don't know the answers when we really do. And so that's been a huge part of my growth too, is being able to listen to my own voice. And I want everybody here listening to know that they have their own voice, and that it's there for a reason, and that they can hear it. It like comes out every now and then, but a lot of times we tell it to shut up.
We shove it down deep inside.
Yes. And we doubt it and we say, no, that's not right. No. And we get rid of it. And I want people to know that the best thing that they can do for themselves is to listen to it.
That's beautiful.
Thanks.
I love you.
Oh, I love you too. See, I'm like, oh wait, and I have more.
That's okay. Do you want to add one more thing?
Oh no, I was just going to say not only the best thing for ourselves, but the best thing for the people around us too. The best thing for our kids and our families and our partners. And yeah, it's a ripple effect.
It is a ripple effect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I love you. Thank you.
I love you too. Thanks for sharing your heart with us today.
All right, my beautiful friends, there you have it. I hope that my story has inspired or touched you in some way, and that it brings you strength and hope for moving forward in your own growth in life. If it touched you, please share it out, leave the We Podcast a review, and subscribe to our channel, as we will be continuing to bring you inspiring stories and growth topics every single week. We would also love to connect with you. You can find me and the other leaders in the We community on Facebook and Instagram, and you can find me on my personal Facebook and Instagram pages. There are lots of exciting things to come in the We community, and we don't want you to miss it. Stay tuned for much more awesomeness and opportunities for connection and growth. Thank you, Heather, for your mad interview skills and for making me feel so comfortable and supported always, not just in this space. I'm very blessed by you. All right, remember, your story makes you who you are. Speak your truth, grow constantly, rise above, and always know you are not on this journey alone. See you next time.